Welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Maureen Lewis Stump. Movies can sometimes feel very real, bringing up emotions and even physical reactions as we watch them. Washington University cognitive neuroscientist Jeff Sachs studies how the brain processes visual imagery, including what we see on film. Veronique LaCapra sat down with Sachs to ask him how film affects our brains.
In my lab, we're real interested in how our brains experience watching real life and participating in it. We study things like how you understand washing dishes or making a bed or navigating across campus. And that stuff can go really wrong in various kinds of neurological injury and brain disease. As we are studying this, we started making movies of these kinds of everyday activities to understand what was going on in detail. And as we were doing that, we realized that there were some differences between how people perceived real life and movies. There are some things that are special about movies, and that those themselves are super interesting.
All right, yeah, so tell me about that. How do movies work?
One thing that I think is really exciting about films is that they plug into perceptual mechanisms that are tightly wired to our emotional responses. So for lots of us, we can see a visual stimulus on a screen and cry at a movie maybe more easily than we would cry at the same scene in real life. And that is totally perplexing. I think that one way to explain it is to say that movies hijack the same perceptual emotional mechanisms that we use to understand real life. And the second thing to say is that at times they function as overstimulators of those mechanisms. In ethology, there's a notion called the supernormal stimulus, which refers to the fact that sometimes you can take something like a bird's beak, and the baby birds, the chicks, will peck at a facsimile of the bird's beak, just like they would peck at their mother's beak. But then you can make a fake beak that's simplified and abstracted and doesn't even really look like a bird's beak, but it's got like the red tip that's even redder than the real thing, and the baby birds will go crazy for that. And sometimes I think the way that movies push our button is by taking those aspects of the dynamic visual stimulus that we're sensitive to and just ramping them up.
There are some things in movies, though, that are really different from real life. For example, edits where a story might jump from one scene to another, or even within a scene where you see, you know, something quickly cut from one person's perspective to another person's. That's not something our brains really evolved to deal with, or is it?
Editing is a great example because in the whole history of human evolution, we never stared at a visual stimulus and had the whole thing replaced instantaneously with some completely different thing. But that happens like every 2 seconds in a modern action thriller. So why don't our heads just explode when all this crazy visual activity happens? And the answer is that there are parts of your brain that go crazy for those kinds of changes, but we're often almost totally unaware of them. And so there are other parts of your brain that come online and that we think are important for bridging over those visual discontinuities. And once you understand that, you realize, oh, this isn't quite so crazy as it sounds, because though we never experience the equivalent of cuts in real life, we blink, we get distracted, and our eyes move from location to location about 3 times a second on average. And each time that happens, you essentially go blind for about 100 milliseconds while your eyes are ballistically moving.
Most vegetable seeds today are bred by seed companies to be hardy and easier to grow. They're created by crossbreeding different varieties and selecting for specific characteristics. Heirloom seeds are different. Like your grandmother's engagement ring, heirloom seeds have been passed down through generations. And today's gardeners likely wouldn't have access to many of their favorite heirloom plants if it weren't for the work of the Seed Savers Exchange. For Harvest Public Media, Sarah Bowden has the story.
Steve Carlson shows me around the grounds of the Seed Savers Exchange Heritage Farm in Decorah, Iowa. Every year, a fraction of the nonprofit's 20,000 heirloom varieties preserved in a state-of-the-art refrigerated vault are grown out to replenish the seed stock.
This is like 890 acres of kind of rugged limestone bluffs and forests and valleys and pasture land, and then these gardens are sprinkled in all over the place.
Seed Savers helped shape the heirloom community decades before these varieties became bistro delicacies.
It's very likely that we have tomatoes in our collection that no one else does.
Before World War II, most produce grown and sold in the U.S. were heirlooms. Today, the majority of seeds are hybrids. Hybrids have a longer shelf life, but many of these strains can fall short in taste, texture, and appearance. Additionally, heirloom aficionados enjoy a connection to the past. As I munch on some Swiss chard, Carlson explains.
They are seeds with history, with stories, and they are related to specific recipes even.
It was a connection to the past that inspired Seed Savers founders Diane Ott Wheely and her former husband Kent Wheely. Diane and Kent weren't at Seed Savers the day I visited, but Carlson gave me a history of the company. As a wedding gift, the pair received seeds of German pink tomatoes and morning glory from Diane's grandfather. His parents carried the seeds with them when immigrating from Bavaria to Iowa.
Shortly after Diane got these seeds from her grandfather, he'd passed away, and so Diane and Kent felt this responsibility to ensure that these seed varieties had been passed down in her family for multiple generations.
In 1975, the Wheelies started Seed Savers, trading seeds with about 30 gardeners. They believe the best way to preserve a plant variety is to grow it. Now heirlooms are back in style. Jay Miller, an editor at Better Homes and Gardens magazine, credits the foodie movement with heirlooms' growing popularity.
They've suddenly become novelties again, and I think they're considered to be gourmet.
Today, the Seed Savers Exchange has 13,000 members, reaching all 50 states and about two dozen countries. One Seed Savers member, Jerry Gettle of Mansfield, Missouri, joined in the 1990s.
I started trading seeds with people in Australia and Iraq, and from there, that really is what, you know, greatly influenced my interest.
In 98, Gettle started his own business, the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. He says his business continues to grow. In fact, the recent recession was a lucrative period for Baker Creek. Many people return to gardening to save on groceries and supplement their income. Today, dozens of vendors sell heirlooms, and millions of people eat them. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Sarah Bowden.
That's all for this week's Under the Microscope. I'm Maureen Lewis-Stump. Thanks for listening.